Good morning. My name is Willard Pegg, and I am an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Central Group in Greensboro, North Carolina. I don't know how sober I am, but I'm real dry. I'm trying to take a cold, and I've been taking some cold medicine, and it's dried me out real well. It's a beautiful morning, isn't it? Brand new day. Never been a little before. And you and I have a choice to live it as we see fit. And I don't know of any better place to start it than at Monteagle. This is my second trip here. I really enjoyed the first time. And I've enjoyed it this time up until now. I'm going to tell a little story. I think it's a cute story, and I cleared it with a preacher. And Jim, I'm glad to change the program because the preacher's supposed to be first, and he told me he's going to tell my story if I didn't tell it. This respectable old colored girl lived near a little country town. And she was in town this day, and she asked the white minister if he would stop by and baptize her children. And he told her he would be happy to. And the first time he was in her area, he would stop by. And two or three weeks later, he was out in that vicinity, and he stopped by. And he says, "Man, I have a little time, and I'll baptize the children for you now while I'm out here." She says, "Preacher, you picked a bad time to come because there's not a drop of water in the house. But if you'll wait, I'll go to the spring and get some water. A grove of trees way down in the hollow, there's a spring, and I'll hurry." He says, "If you'll hurry, I'll wait on you." And while she was gone, a little colored boy says, "Preacher, I know where there's some water." And he said, "Well, get it, son." So the little boy went and got a bucket and came back, and the preacher started baptizing him. And he finished with two of them and working on the third when Mandy got back. And he told her that he'd almost finished baptizing them. She says, "Where did you get the water?" And the preacher says, "Boy got it." She says, "Boy, where'd you get that water?" And he says, "Out from under your bed." She said, "Lord of mercy, preacher. You've done the Episcopalians out of them Presbyterians." I thought that'd be a good story, Monteagle. I'll tell another one just about the same lines, but this one illustrates a point, I believe. This man came home from work this night, and his little son came over to him and says, "Dad, do you believe everything you hear?" And the man thought a minute, and he said, "No, son, I can't say that I do, but why do you ask?" And he says, "Well, Dad, do you believe everything you see?" And Dad thought for a few minutes, and he said, "Yes, son, I believe everything I see, but why do you ask?" And the little boy says, "Well, you know that old maid school teacher, man?" Dad says, "Yeah." He said, "Well, today in school, a little mouse ran across the floor, and when he ran up her dress, and she squeezed him with her knees, and she squeezed a gallon of water out of him." And I believe it's true with AA, that we can get an awful lot more out of it than we can ever put in it. I really believe it. We were living upstairs in an apartment, and we had oil heat, a circulator, a tank on the ground, and a lift that pulled the oil up. And one day this lift knocked off, it ceased to work, and they called a man to come repair it. And I was upstairs drunk. And two or three days after this, it knocked off again. And they called this same man back. And I was upstairs a little drunker. And again, two or three days later, and again, I don't know how many, it knocked off again. And they called this same man back. And this time I was so sick and so weak, I was crawling, trying to get to the bathroom. And when I came out of the living room, out of the bedroom into the living room, I ran upon this man. And it like scared me to death because I didn't know there's anyone in the world but me. I knew this man, and I'd had a few drinks with him, really, not many. And this time he started talking to me about my drinking and asked me if I'd ever thought about doing anything about it. And I told him I had tried everything I thought. He asked me if I'd ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told him that I had. I remember when it started in Greensboro. I saw an article in a newspaper, and that's all I knew. He told me that he was a member, that there was a meeting that night, and if I would go, he'd be glad to come by and get me. And I told him if I could possibly get dressed, I would go with him. This was in the morning, and I was crawling. And when he came by that night, I was dressed. I'd had a bath and shaved, and I had on clean clothes. And I went to that meeting. And I believe that was February the 7th, 1950. And I've been coming ever since. Now, when I first came to AA, I was kind of like a little boy who cursed all the time. And this particular night, this family, my dad told the little son, says, we're having company for dinner, and I don't want you using any of that profanity. And the little boy said, yes, Paul. So when he sat down at the table, and the father's passing the food, and he says, what will you have, son? And the little boy says, pass me those damn potatoes. And Dad picked him up, carried him in the back room, and wore him out. Brought him back and set him at the table and says, now what will you have, son? And the little boy says, Pa, I don't guess it makes any difference. But there's one thing for sure. I don't want any more of those damn potatoes. And that's the way I was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know how I came. One thing for sure, I didn't want any more of that alcohol. As it turned out, I was to have a little more of it. Not too much, but some more. I had no idea what this program was all about. In fact, I thought maybe you might teach me how to drink, like decent people did. And AA has changed over the years. Thank goodness for the best. In those days, they talked about 55 minutes and all the places they'd been drunk and the jails they'd been in. And at the very end, they'd say, I'm happy to be here. And I was happy to be there, too, but I needed a little bit more than that. And AA has changed over the years. We talk about what it's like now, many of us do, and this is what I prefer to do. I'll talk just a little bit about me and probably a little bit about you. And a whole lot about this program. Anything I say is my own opinion. It's not that of this group, and it's not that of AA as a whole. Because in my opinion, no one speaks for Alcoholics Anonymous, speaks so beautiful for itself. I come from a very poor family. There's five of us children, and my dad was a liquor-drinking brick mason. And we had nothing to begin with, and things were tough at our house. And this is depression times I'm speaking of. And at about 13 or 14, I don't know, I went to the corner. This is the place where the fellows all hung out. And I joined the liquor men and the cheap gamblers, and I stayed with them for many years. I wanted security, and money was security to me at that time. And I stayed with these boys for a long, long time. Alcohol was my choice. Alcoholism was not. I started off as a drinker, and then I became a drunk, and then I became an alcoholic. I never could really handle alcohol, but I think youth was on my side. I traveled with the carnivals in my teen years, and I worked with the gyp joints, the gambling joints, and I grew up really, away from God. We didn't travel in the same circles at all. And I operated on my own power. And I did real well for a while. And I could operate good downhill. And fairly well on the level. But when the going got rough and it was an uphill drag, I couldn't operate. And I got in trouble. And I got in trouble every time I drank. Sometimes with the law, sometimes with the family, and always with myself. I can assure you that I'm an alcoholic, that I'm qualified to be here. And if you didn't believe me when I told you I was an alcoholic, you won't believe anything else I have to say, so it won't make any difference, really. I didn't come to please this morning, really. I come to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous as I see it. And if what I say might hurt you, well, it just hurts. That's all. If I say something that makes someone else feel a little better, or someone think, it'll be a good meeting. And I have never yet learned whether I think what I believe or believe what I think. I don't know which. I can't figure this out. But it's one of them. I always say, a thinking alcoholic don't drink, and a drinking alcoholic don't think. And I believe that, but I can't take it any further. I came to the program an agnostic, maybe. Not an atheist, because I don't believe there is any such thing. An agnostic, maybe. And I attended meetings, many meetings. And I kept wondering, when are we going to do something? We read the steps. We didn't have the traditions then. And I talked about 55 minutes, like I told you, about being drunk. And I was a little disappointed, really, because I knew more about drinking than a lot of them did. I wanted to stay sober. And they didn't seem to know how to tell me to stay sober. And I believe now that sobriety in the beginning is a gift of God. I don't believe that a practicing alcoholic can comprehend the significance of these 12 steps. I don't believe he's capable of understanding what this program is all about. And therefore, I believe it's a gift. And some of us are sicker than others. And the length of this gift depends upon how sick we are. And at the end of this time, whatever it might be, we earn sobriety. And we earn it by practicing the principles of this program in our daily lives. I also believe that we take these steps in sequence, exactly as they're written. That two doesn't mean much until we take a part of one. And three doesn't mean much until we take a part of two and right on down the line. I don't believe that we can ever finish or take any one of these steps in their entirety. I believe I can go back and work on any given step at any given time. And I have done this, and it's proved successful for me. I've been sober ever since I could remember. I would like to talk about the 12 steps this morning, as I said. And this is not an interpretation of the 12 steps. Some of the things that I had to do and some of the things that I wanted to do after I did some of the things that I had to do. And step number one was the easiest step of them all for me. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. And I had known for years that I could not handle alcohol. I could drink it, yes. I never knew what the results would be. Some nights I was a lover, some nights I was a fighter, and some nights I tried to be both. I never knew what the results would be when I drank. My life unmanageable, yes. I had made a mess of everything that I had ever tried to do. But it went far beyond that. There was many facets of my life that I had never tried to manage. Namely, a spiritual life. I'd never had a spiritual life. I had never tried to have one. And this is mismanagement. This is what this thing is all about. Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program. We used to talk about the spiritual side of AA. And I was kind of like Mr. Smith along this line, a man who lived down the street from me. Mr. Smith was a great church man. He practiced a spiritual program on Sunday. He had the one side of it. He drank liquor and played poker with me during the week. But he had the spiritual side of the program, and Sunday was his day that he used it, and I never could find out which day I was supposed to use that spiritual side. So I just stayed drunk during the week, and I'd practice the spiritual side on Sunday. And they talked about this spiritual side. Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program. It's round, it's all spiritual, always has been, and always will be. And there were two things I was really running from when I came here, and this was policemen and preachers. Preachers always trying to put me in hell, and the policemen always trying to put me in jail. And I knew more about hell than the preachers ever knew, right here on earth. And I knew right much about jails because I'd been there many times. 13 times when I was 18 years old as a result of alcohol. Things that went along with it. Step number one was easy. I'd been in AA a short while when I got drunk, a one-day deal. And I turned an automobile over. And we sold this car for junk. And it was a new car. And I came out of this accident with a little hole right along here, 3 stitches. And I was charged with driving 100 miles an hour, not heeding a siren, driving drunk, illegal possession of whiskey, carrying a concealed weapon, resisting arrest. I believe that's all of it. I was put in a little in jail in a little town near us, High Point. And a man whom I'd only known since I'd been in AA came over and went my bond. $1,000. And that's a pretty good bond. And another man whom I'd only known since I'd been in AA, and a man that I did not like, a bald-headed man, and I didn't like him at all. We went to his office. He went to school with the judge that was trying me. And he called this judge on his telephone long distance, and he talked to him about me and got him to recommend a lawyer, or tried to get him to recommend a lawyer, and he wouldn't do it. And he talked about school a little while, and then he talked about me a little while, and he finally got him to tell who he would get if he were in trouble, and he thanked him and hung up, called the lawyer and told him he'd been recommended. And I got out of this for $13.25. Illegal possession of whiskey. That was the only thing he convicted me of. But the point I'm trying to make is, I had never known people like this. Anytime I had tried to help anyone, I was trying to get in his pocketbook. I stole money from people with cards and dice and my wits and or any way I could get it. And I did this for years, and this is all I knew. And I thought, maybe this is what these men were after, and my pocketbook was real flat about this time. And I come to find out that all these men wanted was me to get sober and stay sober. And I'd never known people like this. And I had already made the statement that if all the people in AA were like that old bald-headed SOB, I didn't want any part of this thing. I didn't like this guy. He knew too much about me, and he hadn't known me for about 30 days or so. And he shook his finger right under my nose. Today, I call that man my sponsor. He's one of the best friends I've ever had or ever will have. And if you don't have a sponsor, pick out the ugliest, meanest old man in your group and ask him to be your sponsor. It'll work. It usually does. Step number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore society. I had already heard these boys talking about a power greater than ourselves. And when I turned this car over, I think that's when the seed was planted, really. I came to believe. And if you could have seen this car, you would know what I'm talking about. It looked like it was impossible for anything to live that had been in it. And I had 3 little stitches along. I didn't do very much about this at this time, except think and restore it to sanity. I couldn't argue with this at all. I'd been in a nut house as a result of alcoholism. I saw my papers up in the service, and saw my papers when they carried me back to my camp, and it had on there acute alcoholism. And I knew I was acute alcoholic, but I didn't know much about alcoholism. What does this step really say? Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore society. Doesn't say it will at all. In the big book, it tells us that it will. Can and will if sought. We have to seek these things that happen to us, I believe. I did. And I'm talking about me now. But the seed was planted here, and I began to work on this. And the third step, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand it. This was the hardest step of them all for me. And I didn't see how I could ever take this step. I liked the last part of it. God as I understand it. I had never had this choice in my life before. People had tried to will their will on me all my life. And I was a rebel at heart, and I couldn't accept it. But they gave me a choice, God as I understand Him. And I didn't understand God, that's for sure. And I don't understand God now. God's infinite, and we're not supposed to understand Him. Belief and faith, and I have that today, thanks to this program. My faith is a blind faith, but it works. In our little florist shop, there's an AA meeting every day. There's people in and out of there all the time, and we have a young Episcopal clergyman in our group. He's been sober about 9 months now, and he comes by a lot. And just recently, we had a couple of people, young people, to die with heart attacks. And they were talking to just general discussion that they couldn't understand God. Was it God's will for people to die? These people were just getting their lives straightened out in AA, and then they died. And then it went on, and I was not in the conversation even. I was just listening. And it came around, was it God's will for little children to die? And then infants who have never lived, have never sinned at all, never had a chance of sin, and still to die. And this young clergyman made this statement. Says, have you ever thought about what heaven would be like without children? And boy, it shook me up right good, I'm telling you. I had never thought of that in my life. And I said, Joe, who told you that? And he said, nobody. I just happened to think of it while we were talking. And I understood God much better right then. And this was just last week. I add a little something every day to my understanding. I couldn't take this step. And I've looked back over the years, and I hesitated to do this. Turn my life and my will over to the care of God. And what life? I didn't have a life. A sorry mess, and still I hesitated to turn it over to something that could take care of it for me. And I've come to believe that I don't have the power to run my life, and I don't think you have the power to run my life. So I just turn it over to a power that's greater than I am, that I choose to call God today. How simple it is now. A boy straightened me out a little on that step in the beginning. He says it says to make a decision. And this doesn't necessarily mean that I have to do it right now, just make a decision. And this I did. And then I got to step four. And this is the step where we find out who, what, and where we really are. I made this inventory and I found out a lot of things that I already knew. And I found out a lot of things that I did not know about me. I went deep. And I brought out some good things, believe it or not. And I think that we should do this. Because there's a little bit of good in all of us. Self-condemnation is a killer, and this is what we've been doing up to this point. Condemning ourselves. And I had too. I didn't think that I was worthy of the grace of God. The life that I had led, I just couldn't see how I could possibly be. But I was beginning to live along here in this program. The Dick Book says 8 or 9 times to make a written inventory. And if you haven't done this, I suggest that you do. It's most important that we do it. And I suggest that you get a legal pad because it'll take one. And a pencil with an eraser. And when you finish this inventory, if there's any erasers on this paper at all, tear it up and throw it in a wastebasket because you told a damn lie if you had to rub it out. And this is a program of honesty. And it begins with self-honesty. I had to become honest with me before I could ever think about being honest with you. And this was a job because I didn't know how to be honest. It was contrary to the way I had lived. I found out many things about me. I really found out who I was. And this is what I did, really. I went in a room in front of a mirror. And my name's Willard Pegg, and I had a talk with Willard Pegg that day. A good one and a long one. And I told him, I said, I can no longer live with you. And me or you one's got to go, and I'm not going to take one damn step. And I run him off that day. I run him completely out of my life, and he's never come back in since. Old Willard's gone. And it had to be that way. I couldn't live with that guy. And I knew it. And I run him off. And things begin to change for me then. I think after step four, we go to 5 immediately. We find out the exact nature of our wrongs in 4. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Admitted to God's not enough, because God doesn't reveal secrets. He doesn't pry into our business. And God to tell other people about us. I admitted it to myself when I took the inventory. That's why I bring another human being into the picture, someone I have confidence in, a friend, a minister, fellow member of Alcoholics Anonymous. In my case, I used an AA member. And this was the greatest relief I had ever had up to this point when I told someone else all about me, withholding nothing. And I didn't have to run anymore. Somebody else knew me for exactly what I was. This fear of the unknown, it was gone. And it's still gone. And I didn't have to run. And I didn't have to be afraid. And I was never afraid of what had happened or what might happen. Just fear of the unknown. Running scared, you were caught. This is what I did. And I didn't have to do this anymore when I told somebody else all about me. And then we go to the 6th step. Became willing to have God remove all these defects of character. I now knew what my defects of character were as a result of the inventory step. Some of them I was ready for them to be removed, and some I was not, and I still have some of my old defects. I'm not perfect by a long shot, and I know I'm not. I'm not trying to tell you I am. I'm simply trying to tell you what happened to me as a result of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I found a way of life that I really like that's second to none, really. I have two characters, really. And one of them is what you think I am. And the other one is what I know I am. And this is the one I have to live with. The one I know I am. Now, if my character is defective, it makes sense that I'll have to replace it with something whole and wholesome to make it be a complete character again. And this is what I've tried to do, a day at a time. Step 7, I'm only asking to remove our shortcomings. Step 6, we become willing. Step 7, we just simply ask God to remove them, that's all. And how is the best way for a man or a woman to humble themselves to God? Abe Lincoln made a statement once, something like this, that when you've tried everything else and everything else has failed, try your knees. That's a pretty good way for a man or woman to humble themselves to God. And I have never humbled myself to a man or a woman. Never. And I couldn't humble myself to God for a long, long time. And Cease probably told the story about Shy Walker when he was here. I was a delegate with Cease, and I heard that same story about the boy that wore the boots. And he couldn't humble himself to God. He couldn't get on his knees and pray. And this night, when he went to bed, he kicked his boots under the bed. And when he got up the next morning, he had to get down on his knees to get them out from under the bed. And the thought hit him, well, since I'm down here, I'll just give it a whirl. And he did. And he did it every night and every morning as long as he lived. He's now dead. He also made the remark that this will work with street shoes also. So if you haven't tried this, you might try street shoes. Humble ourselves to God. And this is the way we ask Him to remove these shortcomings and defects of character, by just simply humbling ourselves to God. The next step are the amend steps, and they're most important in the life of an alcoholic. And I'm not trying to minimize the importance of any one step, because they're all important. Some I want to dwell on just a little longer than others, so some I'll just touch on lightly. Made a list of all people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Well, I'm a product of the honky-tonk days, and I lived in those places. I grew up in them. And I fought all over this country in those places, and I thought this is what they were talking about, these people that fought with in the beer joints and things. And I finally came up with 5 people that really mattered. My mother and my old maid sister. And I used to say that I heard my mother pray for me for 20 years. And I changed that recently. I saw her pray 20 years. I didn't hear anything. And I'm making amends to her by just staying sober, that's all. She's perfectly happy with just that way. I'm making amends to this old maid sister, but just stand sober. She paid me out of jail all the time, and I never paid her back. And so she became happy when I got sober. I'm making amends to her by just staying sober. Next to her, my wife and my daughter. And I'm making amends to my wife for just staying sober and being the husband that I should have been all the time, no more, no less. Just what I should have done all the time. I'm making amends to my daughter for just staying sober and being the father that I should have done all the time. No more, no less. That's 4. I said it was 5. And the next one heads the list. And that one is me. When I became willing to make amends to me for the wrongs I had done to me, then I began to live. I began to get back my self-respect, and I had lost it. And you had lost yours also, if you're alcoholic. And maybe if you're Al-Anon, I've heard some of them say that they lost it. We cannot do the things that we did under the influence of alcohol and still have self-respect. And I had lost mine. And when I became willing to make amends to me, I began to live, began to get back my self-respect. And it went far beyond that. I began to get the respect of others. My very actions demanded it, and I got it. And I get it today. And it goes still farther. I began to have people make amends to me for the wrongs that they had done to me. You know, we get hurt in this deal a lot ourselves. And I've had people to make amends to me, really. Along about here in this program, we have to be real careful, I believe. Some of us try to get good before we get well. And this is a killer. And I tell this story a lot, I like it. Like the old railroad man out in Texas who had lost his job as a result of alcoholism. He joined Alcoholics Anonymous and got his job back. And first payday, he decided he would take a sleeper from Dallas to El Paso. He liked to ride trains. He got in a compartment, he's back in the club car living it up and having a big time. Not drinking, but just having a good time. And about midnight, he decided he'd go to bed. And when he went back and opened up his compartment, and he was shocked and embarrassed, really, there was two women in his bed. And this old boy didn't know what to do. And he kind of scratched his head a little bit, and he said, "Look here, girls. I've joined Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm trying to do what's right. And one of you girls has got to find another place to sleep." See, this old boy getting well before he got good, and this and that thing. I've seen two men who get good too soon, and the result is nil. The next step, I don't think we should discuss at group level. This is the way I see it. This involves another person. We came willing to make amends to all people we'd harmed, except when to do so would injure them or others. We've hurt people all our life, and we're trying to avoid this now. And this step involves another person. And I think it should be discussed with your sponsor or with another person, but not at group level. This is the way I see it. And I think that it's important that we do this. I like to think, as I travel along these steps in my daily life, as the road to utopia. And this is what it is, really. I am beginning to live now about here in this program. The tenth step is continuing to take a personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And this is such a beautiful step and so simple. And I have a way I do it, and it might help you. It takes about 5 minutes, if it's been a normal day, to make this inventory. And I simply review the 12 steps as I have lived them this day. Am I still an alcoholic? Do I still believe in a power that's greater than I am? Have I made any amends today? Have I meditated any? Have I prayed any? Have I helped anybody? Have I hurt anybody? If so, what am I going to do about it? And I've already learned in this program what I can do about it. Take about 5 minutes. Just simply review those 12 steps. This will cover anything you or I did today. I guarantee it. Nothing hard about this at all. I heard Dr. Bob make his last talk. And it was a beautiful talk. And we don't remember much of it except he said, keep it simple, don't louse it up. And this is what I have to do, keep it simple, because I'm a simple person. And this works for me, this 5 minute daily inventory. It's wonderful, try it, if you have it. Now in my opinion, if we work these first 10 steps to the best of our ability, and sometimes mine hadn't been enough, I've had to use yours. But if we do this, these next 2 steps are automatic. There's no problem here at all. And I had to come into this program on step 11 or 12, I would never have made it. Have you ever thought about the great power that's behind this program? Have you really thought about it? Many of us drank uncontrolled drinking 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years. Uncontrolled drinking. Come to one A meeting and never have to drink again. Can you explain it any other way? Great power behind this program. This is another thing that I'll never cease to be amazed at. Some of our great religions condone the use of beverage alcohol more than others, and we have a lot of ministers in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've seen many of them come in my time. And I'm sure that many of these people were dedicated men. And they were practicing in the pulpit. And I've seen this alcohol pull them right out of the pulpit into the gutter, really. And along come the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Pick him up out of the gutter and put him right back in the pulpit. Great power behind this program. There really is. I've also seen it work with my life. I'm not a preacher, and I've never had any desire to be a preacher. I like to talk about the spiritual program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So this is where I found what I have. And I'm like this little boy story. I tell a lot of little boy stories. Because it's what we are. Little boys trying to grow up. This man came home from work this night and patted little son on the head and he said, son, have you been good today? And little boy said, no, sir. Have you been bad? No, sir. Just comfortable. And this is what's happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't been too good and I haven't been too bad. Just comfortable. I came to AA a cheat gambler. And I felt comfortable cheating. If I get your money, this is what I was after. And I didn't care how. If I had to cheat a little harder, I cheated a little harder. And I was comfortable. After 4 or 5 years in this program, I became uncomfortable cheating, but I stayed here a long time cheating. But after a 4 or 5 year period, I became uncomfortable. And I quit cheating. I just continued to gamble. Won some and lost some there. After 6 years ago, this past January, six coming up, I became uncomfortable again just gambling. So I quit. And I became comfortable again. And I'm comfortable today. I'm not plugging for Gamblers Anonymous, I'm just telling you about me. If there's anything bugging you, turn it loose. This is what I'm trying to tell you. And you can get comfortable again. This is what the program is all about, being comfortable. I think. So through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand it. praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I said a prayer and I lay me down to sleep. The next one I said was on a little island of Aoshima during World War II. I was sleeping in a foxhole one night in the forward area. I was in the Marine Corps. And as a jet plane got in on us, one plane, we had no night fighter protection, he dropped a string of three bombs and one hit near me. I didn't get hurt, but I got scared to death. Listen to this. I woke up praying. Didn't wake up and say, shall I shoot, run, or pray? I just woke up praying. Things were out of control and I knew it. I could no longer handle this situation, but I knew where to go. And I believe you do also. I believe that this is instinct, that it's born in each and every one of us. It's just a natural instinct like a homing pigeon. And it takes a little more to activate it in some of us than it does others. In my case, this bomb acted as a catalyst and got things going. I never said another prayer until it came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, things were out of control. I could no longer handle this situation and I knew it. But again, I knew where to go. Working in these jib joints in the carnivals came in good for me this time. I acted as a shield in those days to steer people in that I thought might have money, to observe people. And I began to observe people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I noticed that the ones who were successful in this program talked about spiritual things. And they talked about prayer and meditation. Every single one of them. The ones who denied this got drunk often. Every single one of them. And if you don't believe I'm telling the truth, observe when you go back home and see. And if you're not doing this, and you want to get comfortable and get what this program has to offer, try it. It works. Now what does this step really say? Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact. Meaning that as a result of these first 10 steps, if we've tried to live them, we have had a contact, whether we wanted to or not. To improve it, sought to improve it. I seem to get more out of meditation, really, than prayer, for me. Meditation to me is listening. Just listening. So when God's will for me projects itself, I can receive it. And located in me somewhere is a little gadget called a conscience. And that's my receiving self. I've never been wrong in my life when I went by the dictates of my conscience. Never. I never did anything wrong that I didn't know was wrong. Even as rough as I was when I was growing up. And even as bad as I was when I was a practicing alcoholic. I had to do some of these wrong things that I did to stay where I was. I thought, like Marguerite said last night many times, that I wanted oblivion. I wanted out. And I didn't know how to get out. What is God's will for me? I think I know what this is, too. To lead a clean, decent life every day of my life. I don't believe He'd want it any other way. Praying only for knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. This is where we miss the boat a lot of times, where we don't seek the power to carry it out. Now maybe this meditation that I've been talking about is a form of prayer. I don't know. I don't know how to pray, really. I just talk to God like I'm talking to you people. Anytime. I don't have to have a certain time. And what are the results? I just feel better every time I do it. This is what happens. I was coming back from Arkansas one time, going home, and we spent a night in a motel, and was reading the newspaper, and my answer by Billy Graham. And this lady, the question was, I can't pray in public, and my children are starting a Sunday school, and what can I do about it? And this was the answer. And I don't know where it was located, where it's located in the big, big book, but it's been there, it told. Go into your closet and pray in silence, and you'll be rewarded openly. This is in the big, big book somewhere. Boy, this really made sense to me. I could do this. I can pray in front of this group of people. It's not in me. I can't do it. I can sit here and be comfortable while you are doing it, but I just can't do it. So, go into your closet and pray in silence, and you'll be rewarded openly. So maybe this is what I was doing, praying in silence when I thought I was meditating. I don't know. But it works, which is whatever it was. And I just continue to do it. And I just continue to feel better all the time. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Having had a spiritual awakening. What is a spiritual awakening? This is what it is to me. Recognizing and utilizing the power of Almighty God. This is a spiritual awakening to me. That when I recognize the power of God, and then I put it to work in my daily life like I have been told to do, to me, man does the possible and God does the impossible. It's that simple. You know, friend, when you pray for potatoes, you better grab a hoe. I believe that. And I believe this story about the old colored preacher, too. He said, sometimes when I pray for a turkey, sometimes I get one, sometimes I don't. But every time I ask the good Lord to show me where that turkey is, I get one every time. And I believe that. I think you get material things with greenback dollars. That's where you got them. Get spiritual food through prayer and meditation. And God has always supplied me with enough since I've started asking. And He never did supply me with any of it until I did ask Him. He never meddled in my affairs at all until I invited Him in. And I didn't do this overnight, and I'm not trying to tell you I did. Practice these, tried to carry this message. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. What message? Spiritual message, that's what it says. Not a drunk message, a spiritual message. That's what the step says. And to practice these principles in all of our affairs. In the beginning, a big, big book gave you and I 10 steps to live by. And we could not or would not live by them, therefore we got in trouble. And along came this program of Alcoholics Anonymous in the big book and gave us 12 steps to live by if we had not lived by the 10 steps of the big, big book. And we got our lives straightened out. And where did it lead us? Right back to the 10 steps of the big, big book. This is the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, as I said. The 10 commandments. I don't believe it could be any other thing. And I don't believe that you and I can live with those 10 steps and not be a decent person. This program requires common decency. and I found it for me. And I love it. I had no God when I came here. And I told you I had a bath and a shave and I had clean clothes when I made my first meeting. And I was clean on the outside and it was absolutely filthy on the inside. And as a result of these steps, I began to clean up on the inside and purge myself of this filth. And I'd look for God out there and up here and all around. And I kept cleaning up a little on the inside. And I found a God of my understanding right in here, where he'd been all the time. And I'd had him covered up. I couldn't find him. And that's where he is, in here. That's where it comes from, I believe. This is what happened to me. And this is a little old personal story. It might not mean much, but it meant much to me. I was playing poker several years ago now with a group of people, not any members of a little old $4 limit game. And I was losing. $35, $40, I don't know, not much. And that old devil jumped up on my shoulder and he says, "You gonna let these monkeys take your money?" And I could cheat them to death, and I knew I could. And I never did like to lose, never have liked to lose. And I fought that old boy for a long time, and he stayed right there with me. And to make the story short, I left that game a few dollars loser with the greatest victory I had ever had at this time, because I didn't cheat when I wanted to. Practice these principles in all of our affairs. I believe if you cheated one thing, you'll cheat at anything. And you might as well, because the big book says, "Half measures availeth nothing." If you're going to cheat Jim, you just well cheat Bob. It's no difference. This is the way I feel about it. And you can't be comfortable cheating. And I heard an old boy say out in Texas one time, "If you can't practice these principles in all your affairs, stop having affairs." I said I like to think of this as a road to utopia as I go along these steps in my daily life. And this is utopia to me. I'm on a plateau that I never dreamed possible. Never dreamed possible. And on this plateau, I'm at peace with my fellow man. And I'm at peace with myself. I'm at peace with a loving God as I understand it. And that's all there is. There's nothing else. If you're looking for more than that in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're missing the boat. Peace with myself, my fellow man, and a loving God as I understand. And I'm not kidding. I'm serious when I say this. I feel this way all the time. And I give the program of Alcoholics Anonymous all the credit. And this is another thing. Listen to this. My cup runneth over, really. And has for a long time. The old Willard would have run to get another cup. And I didn't do it. I became willing to help you fill yours. And boy, what a switch. That old guy that I used to live with, he never did anything like that. And this is worth it all right here. When I became willing to help you fill yours. This is something. And if you've known me, you know what I'm talking about. And I love it this way. I love people like this. Just because they are people. And especially alcoholics and the friends and the mates, children. And I'm going to stop in a minute. That's why I put that preacher on after me so he could close this meeting at the right time. They told me to attend meetings. Got an old boy in here attends right many of them. And this little boy's story, I think, illustrates this real well. Again, this man came home from work this night and patted his little son on the head. And said, "Son, what'd you learn in school today?" "Not very much. I've got to go back tomorrow." Same thing with Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't learn very much today. We have to come back tomorrow. This little left that I told you about in the beginning. We lived in the same house for almost 7 more years. And this thing never knocked off again. That oil left I was talking about. 3 times in a period of 10 or 12 days. And I like them just long enough to get me to Alcoholics Anonymous and then start running again. I doubt if I would have come under any other conditions. You see, I'm one of the lucky ones. If somebody called you to make a 12-step call, said, "Oh, John, my neighbor needs somebody," would you go? Or would you say, "Did John say you call me?" I didn't call. God just sent him out there, that's all. I never asked for anything. I was too far gone. When I needed him most, he sent him out. And I made more 12-step calls on this old boy that brought me the message than he ever made the whole time he's an Alcoholics Anonymous. He never made the program at all. But he brought it to me. He's dead now, and he's a fine man. I'll close with this story. And I'm getting wound up. I could talk a long time now. A friend of mine in AA tells this story, and I always close with it because I like it. And this is about the old mountain man named John, who lived way back in the hills. And he had an old bull fiddle, or a bass fiddle, had one string on it. And John sat out on the front porch of this log cabin, and he sawed away for hours at a time on that one string. And one Saturday, his wife had to go down in the village to do some shopping. And there was a parade in town. And in this parade were some floats, and on a float was a band or an orchestra. And there was a man playing one of these instruments, and he was noting it as you're supposed to do. And she went back home, and old John was on the porch. And he was sawing away on that one string. And she said, "John, you don't do it right. I was in town today, and I saw a man playing one of those things, and he was moving his hand up and down on it." And old John just kept sawing away. And in a few minutes he answered. He said, "Yes, and he's looking for something. And I found what I want."